RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Tech Tuesday, Stephen Sykes. Don't need to say much more than that, do I, Stephen?
How about good morning?
Oh, you're right. Good morning, Stephen. Great to see you again. How are you?
Yeah, not too shabby, thanks.
I think we've had I'm very good. I'm up and I'm happening. And I'm always looking forward to the segment of Tuesday. So I believe we've had a few people get in touch this week.
This is true. So we kick off with the first one is a question on saying that 6 months ago, a 5G tower was placed 25 meters from our home in Mahina Bay. Since then, we feel like we are not sleeping well and both talk about pressure on our heads. Is this possible or just us going cuckoo? Both of them are likely. I mean, who would rather... I'd rather be cuckoo than normal, but the symptoms that you are describing are actually quite common when you're that close. 25 metres, that's pretty much your next door neighbour, really.
I think I know where that is, Stephen. That's in Wellington somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah. Is it Lyle Bay type area?
No, it's around Eastbourne.
Oh, Eastbourne, sorry.
Yeah, know it well. Lovely little bay. Oh, dear. Might even know the folk, actually.
So what I suggest you do is that... you contact Andy Hooley, who's a EMF specialist. He's based in Kapiti. Go to his website, earthwaves.co.nz, and get a proper assessment, which he will deliver, because then he'll be able to categorically tell you, yes, there's an absolute truckload of EMF coming from that tower, and advise you on what you can do about it.
Okay. All right. Sore head. Oh, dear.
Yeah, that's not good.
And if you didn't have one before and you've got one after, well, what does that tell you, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, moving on.
So moving on. So somebody was just confirming that the telecom CEO, the guy's name we were trying to remember, was indeed Paul Reynolds.
And hi, laddie.
He followed, how do you say it, Gatung, who was apparently a WEF young global leader.
Oh, not another one.
Fun fact for a Tuesday morning.
Okay.
Bruce asks, can you please ask Stephen how to protect a NAS server from any encryption lockers and viruses? Is there any software he can recommend for protection or a program that protects the NAS like a vault? You don't say exactly, but I don't know if you're talking about a NAS that you've built or one that you've just bought off the shelf. My preference personally is to build one, because then I can dictate exactly how it all goes together, including the software on it. But if there's any default usernames, I would change those to something else, anything else, because if the thing ever gets attacked, the first thing they'll go for are default usernames. Change that. I would not make it available from the internet, and I would not let a Windows machine anywhere near it.
Oh, okay. What, even physically?
Well, maybe share the same room, but as far as the network's concerned, you don't let her talk to it.
In other words, common sense applies, Stephen.
I think so. There's a plethora of other things one could do, is like making sure that its software is up to date at all times. And the thing I don't like about off-the-shelf NAS machines is that they tend to have a limited lifetime, because it's typically only supported for as long as the manufacturer feels like. But if you build your own, then it's supported for as long as you feel like.
Dumb question. What is NAS? What does it stand for?
Network Attached Storage. So instead of having a hard drive inside your machine, you have it inside a box, and you have other computers, or even laptops for that matter, attached to it and store files there, and you have multiple hard drives in it, and it's set up typically in a RAID array, which is a redundant array of independent disks. So if any disks fail, it'll go, hey, I've had a hard drive failure, but you won't lose data, because it's got special features in it which allow it to chug along if one drive fails. So it's a common storage area.
I should have got that, you know, the acronym. All right, moving on.
Okay. Could you please ask Stephen about wrapping a smart meter in tin foil, whether it makes it safe? Not really. The reason being is that smart meters, or any meters for that matter, can be in a variety of different places on your house. You can buy things which are custom made to go over the top of the meter. But if you do that, you are forcing the EMF out the backside of the meter. So if on the back side of that EMF meter, not the EMF meter, the smart meter, if there's a bedroom, you're then pushing the EMF that was radiating out of the front out the back. So the poor person who's on the other side of that's getting more of it.
Don't do that.
Yeah. So an EMF is a bit like water. You know, you block one path and it'll take another one.
Okay. It's a good way to think about it. All right. Yeah. What else we got, Stephen?
Okay. This is not really a question. I am, and our correspondent formally says it's a rant. She writes, I am a self-confessed technophobe, yet I enjoy the tech talk, barely understand it, and it scares the S and lots of asterisks out of me. It somehow alerts me to how far in the stook we are. I only, as far as possible, use cash. Recently, I had a minor meltdown at the gas station when I activated the pump and cleaned my windscreen whilst filling, to find the blinking thing hadn't even started filling. Went in to buy something, could not get my wife's card to work. Decided, bugger it, and found a station operates in a customer-focused way. I may have told the poor attendant to stick his business up his bum. Not my finest moment.
Oh, really?
Bloody frustrating. Rant over.
Okay, yeah. I understand that frustration. I understand it.
Yeah.
Okay, but you got to be polite. Got to be civil, all right? Paul says be civil.
Pro tip.
All right, any more?
No, that was our feedback for this week. So if there is anything, yeah, thank you. If there is anything that we talk about that's not quite clear cut and you want it explained differently, then do feel free to say, hey, can you reword that? Thanks.
Yeah, come back to it or something like that.
Yeah.
Let's get on to news. Search for Trump, you get who?
Kamala Harris, is that how you say her name?
Kamala,
so, yeah, so Elon Musk retweeted somebody else who showed on a Google phone using Google search, when you type in Donald Trump, instead of getting information about Donald Trump, you get information about Kamala Harris.
Okay, I wonder how that works.
Well, you may recall Alistair Harding had a chat with Dr. Robert Epstein about exactly this, how Google manipulate the information, and clearly are getting quite involved in politics and trying to nudge your thinking along.
Yeah, there's been quite a bit said about AI-generated pictures of Kamala Harris arriving on Air Force Two, and the tail number of the plane is missing.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, where did it go? And the reflections on the engine cells are odd. You know, people are doing deep dives into every almost pixel of these things. And there was a shot of people holding up cameras, you know, their phones to her in the crowd, and they all had different images on them.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if that was a setup in of itself or was the real thing from the picture provided, but man, you know, what's real?
Well, I was going to say, you know, the upside of this, it teaches people to question everything instead of just blindly accepting that which you're told. You go, well, is what I'm being told the truth, or is what I'm being shown the truth? So if there is a silver lining, my pick is that's it.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way they'd take the tail number off Air Force Two. No way.
No.
So, you know, what tail is it? just asking. Ford filed patent to record speeding, like you're speeding, if you're speeding.
Not only you're speeding, but people in vehicles around you. So they have filed a patent 12th of January last year, although this has only really recently come to light. So it allows to track all the vehicles around it, and this can be done by noticing the ID of various sensors, in your vehicle and vehicles next to you, and basically report you to the police for speeding. And go, well, okay, that's the buy-in. And people go, yeah, sure, that sounds like a good idea to report people who are speeding. But then you stop to think, well, what else could it be used for? Gone outside your 15-minute city recently.
Well, that's a bit naughty. You wouldn't buy a Ford on that basis, would you? Well, or they all end up being like that.
Potentially, well, they want the patent on it. I mean, they clearly filed the patent. But because there's a working relationship between Ford and Mazda, that could seep over to them as well. Yeah. It could extend. And then there's other manufacturers might go, hey, this is cool. And then sort of buy the licensing rights from Ford to use it as well. And given that various sensors also have IDs in them, in a vehicle, the modern vehicles do have internet capability if you, you know, hook it to your phone, etc., then because they've got MAC addresses, these can all be identified to uniquely your vehicle.
Used to be once driving was freedom.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going, isn't it? It's going to disappear.
Well, unless we start complaining about it and take action, because if you don't take action, then this outcome is guaranteed.
Yeah. Japanese might consider a 500-kilometer-long conveyor belt. Really?
Yeah, and they think this could potentially replace 25,000 trucks per day.
Okay, well, that's quite smart, actually.
Well, the motivation is because that they say Japan is struggling with a labor crisis, and they say it will cost them billions. So the conveyor belt that they are considering will run between Tokyo and Osaka. I probably should have looked up the distance for that, but it's quite a very long. Well, it's 500 kilometers clearly.
Must be, yeah.
It must be. But of course, because they've been tightening up a little bit around logistics, and Japan has well been known for the live to work culture as opposed to work to live. So they're trying to address that by capping the overtime that truck drivers are allowed to work. And some people have said that, or predicted rather, there could be a 14% delivery capacity shortfall, which they are then projecting that supermarket shelves could be left empty and $70 billion US could be lost by the year 2030.
Gosh, I wonder what the engineering challenges of that. I guess you'd make it in sections, would you? Maybe?
Yeah. I was just trying to think how many billions of pieces of Lego blocks would you need for that? That'd be a lot. A lot of Lego.
Okay. Well, on the bullet train, it takes 2 hours 39 to get from Tokyo to Osaka.
Yes. Yeah.
And they do, what, a couple of hundred Ks minimum per hour?
Yeah, I have... I've travelled those lots, and I've taken the, I think it was the Hikari, because she had three, and there was one that stopped at every single station, and then there's the ones that stop at fewer stations, and then there's the ones that go insanely quick and go just to the major stops. And I think I recall seeing the speedo saying 286. Let me think, 2007 in Aichi Prefecture in Nagoya, they had the International Expo there, and they had the maglev train, which runs on magnetic levitation. And from memory, I think that thing could, on their test track, knock off 580 Ks. Was it 580?
Wow, let's get
586.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
That's mind-boggling, actually.
I think that would pull the skin off a rice pudding.
Yeah. Well, that's airspeed. That's 396.45 k's the distance, according to Google. But that's flying, literally flying along the speed of an airliner, almost.
At not very high above speed sea level.
You better hope that levitation hangs in there.
Yeah, or no one hits the brakes in a hurry.
Yeah, what happens with the emergency stop?
You might lose your lunch.
Yeah, everything end up on the bulkhead. All right, a new secret tracking in what, latest iPhone?
Yeah, so in a latest iOS 17 update, it's been revealed that there's a secret tracking system in the iPhone. It's called Journaling, and it basically allows the phone to notice other phones nearby and tell you about it. And there's a lot of privacy concerns around this. It actually came out and activated in iOS 17.2, and Apple people just only semi-recently discovered it. You can allegedly turn the thing off, but as Ruby Media Group CEO Kristen Ruby said on X, "I can't believe no one thinks this Apple Journal is a big deal. Forget ChatGPT. This is on-device machine learning from your life. Hello, wake up."
Yeah, yeah. Gee, the walls are closing in.
We're just going to make different choices. The default choices are not made to serve you.
Most people will take the default, Stephen. You know that.
I do know that, and it makes me sad.
AT&T, this sounds like a big deal, have had, what, nearly all of their data or its data stolen? How could that happen?
Well, this happened just a little while ago. So the time frame of the breach is that it's mostly from a six-month period from May the 1st, 2022, until October the 31st of the same year. And AT&T have only been aware of the hack since the 19th of April this year, and they had been working with law enforcement before going public with it, which is why it's sort of only really been known in the last month. So
right. The
implication of this is that they're saying that months of phone records during that period I just mentioned of nearly all, quote-unquote, of its 110 million customers have been stolen by hackers. And not only just their customers, but who their customers interacted with.
And gosh.
And it also includes the location data of some of their customers, which has also been taken, along with the cell site identification numbers, which potentially reveals the user location during making phone calls and sending regular text messages.
What a disaster.
What a mess.
Yeah, what a mess. Okay.
What a mess.
100 million customers.
Yeah.
Gee, I mean, that's the population of a country.
And then some. I mean, how many times does New Zealand fit in there?
Oh gosh, it's too challenging for me.
It's yeah, over 20 times.
Yeah, 20. Thank you. All right. Those are the stories. Let's get to our main subject for this Tech Tuesday, women in tech. Who are we going to hear about?
So we won't have time today to go through all of them, but today I have chosen to talk about Hedy Lamarr, who was a Jewish Austrian girl. And one of her quotes that she is known for saying is that any girl can look glamorous. All she has to do is stand still and look stupid. And I think, Paul, she potentially shares the same situations that you do, because every time Hedy Lamarr walked into a room, conversations would just stop and they'd just turn and look. Do you get that?
So, not that I've noticed. Like, who's that freak?
Well, not with Hedy, because her looks were so incredibly captivating that she ended up being judged for it. She was actually the inspiration for Snow White and Catwoman, and gave Mel Brooks, the comedian, inspiration for some of his work.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
So she was very influential. She was, fun fact for Tuesday morning, the first woman on the silver screen to simulate an orgasm in a 1930s movie called Ecstasy, which...
Too much detail.
Well, for the time, even Hitler banned it, as well as the Pope, of course. And she, one of her biggest achievements was that she basically invented a radio-controlled torpedo that couldn't be interfered with. This ended up, fast-forwarding a few decades, was the basis for which Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and GPS was based from.
Okay, yep.
Because during the World War II, when the U-boats were so powerful and nearly allowed the Nazis to win the war, this is what caused you to come up with the inspiration for the torpedo guidance system using frequency hopping. So the ship and the torpedo would be synchronized with their frequencies, and they'd all change frequencies at the same time. So communications could always be could continue. Otherwise, you could just jam certain frequencies, and then you could interrupt communications. But she was not well respected for her work, and it was she tried to file a patent on it. But because she was actually an alien, she didn't have U.S. citizenship at the time, it was basically shoved into a top-secret safe and hidden from everybody. And it used the basic principle of, you know, those old piano scrolls? You put them in a piano, hit the go button, and they play themselves.
Yep.
So on those scrolls, there were lines which tell the piano which keys to play, which was how the missile, the communication system works, so they knew what frequencies to switch to.
Oh, so that synced them all.
It's, yeah, so it kept it all synced.
Right, all brilliant.
It was very brilliant.
But so that's a mechanical syncing process, mechanical. Yeah,
yes, but and so that's what it was based, her system was based upon. And she was, you know, basically ignored, and she was told to go and sell war bonds. She raised $25 million at the time, which today equates to over $350 million. By 1962, with the Cuban Missile Crisis, she had learned that Navy ships that they had sent to blockade Cuba had all been using frequency hopping, and that she should have been paid for the patent of her work.
They ripped her off.
They ripped her off, and according to U.S. patent law, when a patent expires, an inventor has 6 years to sue for payment, but she didn't know about it.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
In 1997, she was given an honorary award by the U.S. Navy, MilStar, and Lockheed Martin, and her son accepted the award. She also actually pioneered plastic surgery.
God. Wow.
And then that had the influence that other actresses were asking surgeons to get the similar work that Hedy Lamarr was getting done.
So cosmetic surgery.
Yeah. You know, just things behind the ears. And she'd say, okay, we need to make the scar appear here so that it's not so noticeable. So she kind of pioneered that. She went a bit too far when successive surgeries were trying to fix up the mistakes of the one before. So
they always go too far, Stephen.
They always,
You know, I'm thinking of Kenny Rogers and
yes,
you know, other people, Madonna even. Oh my God.
Mm. She also came up with a few other cool things. She invented a basically a pill of compressed Coca-Cola that when put into a glass of water would give servicemen the ability to have a glass of Coke. And of course, you know, these cubes of Coca-Cola were easier to transport than an entire can. But she said that didn't quite work out because what she didn't realize that each state had varying water quality. So sometimes the cube of Coca-Cola would sit at the bottom, sit in the middle, or just not work at all.
Okay.
And she was married at the age of 19 to Fritz Mandel. He was 33 years old, his senior. He was basically the Henry Ford of Austria. And she got into doing a lot of films. That's how she was sort of known. And she also hooked up with Howard Hughes. and he gave her a mini version of the lab she had at home, but in her trailer. So when people
She could carry on her work.
So she could carry on her work. And he had said to her, look, anything you dream up, you tell my scientists to do it and they'll do it. Howard Hughes, I can't remember the name of the movie, but Leonardo DiCaprio played Howard Hughes.
Oh, that was the aeroplane one.
Yes, because he was interested in trying to sell the fastest aeroplanes to the Air Force, and he relied very heavily on Hedy Lamarr. So what she did, she studied the fastest fish and the fastest birds and came up with a design that amalgamated this to make the fastest aeroplanes.
Okay. Gee. Yeah, well, I think he crashed that plane. I'm trying to remember what the name of the plane was, but he crashed it. It was super, super grunty, super overpowered, and he was lucky to survive that. I was just thinking, you know, you're talking about the U-boats, because I think also I read somewhere that the magnetron came out of hunting for U-boats because the high frequency could penetrate the water. And, of course, out of the magnetron came the microwave oven.
Yeah, yeah.
So warfare is one hell of a, I suppose, necessity being the mother of invention, one hell of a time to innovate, sadly, in a way.
Yes, it is.
What an incredible woman.
She was. She was very incredible. And I think she had like six or seven husbands, and she was basically bored out of a tree with them.
Because she was too smart.
Because she was too smart. And she said that, you know, she finds people's brains far more fascinating than their looks.
Yeah, okay. I'm just processing that. I mean, looks sort of count a little, but it would be very difficult if you weren't her equal to match it, you know, you know what I'm thinking. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. You know, like-minded and on the same page.
It's like, but what about the baseball? You know, what about the football?
Not so exciting.
When you talk about Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, they use that method, do they, of that switching of frequencies? Is that what you're saying originally?
Yeah. So all that work came from. Where's that sentence going? Her work helped or formed the basis of those technologies, the GPS, the Wi-Fi, and the Bluetooth.
Yeah. So just to clarify, was she working originally for the Nazis or no?
No, not that I'm aware of at all.
Right, okay, yeah.
No, because this work, she was sort of doing this, as far as I know, in the USA, pretty
much. Right, gotcha. Yeah, she wasn't an Operation Paperclip beneficiary.
No. And there's other things to suggest that, you know, she was, even when she was 5 years old, she was always curious about things like this. She took apart, when she was five, a little music box because she was curious to know how it worked. And whenever she'd go out walking with her father, she'd be curious about things, and he would always explain how things work, you know, there's the electric car and here's how this works and how that works. So she was very curious, and she has a lot of inspiration, I think, still to give, even though she's long since passed.
Well, that's the first I've ever heard about her, so thank you for that.
Well, I've got a few other influential women to talk about another time.
Okay. All right, there goes another Tech Tuesday here at RCR with Stephen Sykes. Thank you, Stephen. More on Women in Tech next week. All right. Yes. Will it be our 50th program next week?
It will be the big 5-0.
Okay. Well, I guess we should do something for that, shouldn't we?
I think we probably should.
Yeah. Well, let's see what comes together over the week, shall we?
Yeah, I'm thinking of Guinness.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I should be joining you for that. It'll be a virtual one, though. It will be. I can watch you drink yours. You can watch me drink mine.
Yeah.
Until next week, we'll see you again. Stephen Sykes, thanks so much.
See you then.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.